It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting on 100.1 FM here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's 57 degrees. We actually did hit our predicted high of 59 a little while ago. Partly sunny skies for the rest of the day. Partly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 52 tonight. Southeast winds to 5 will become completely calm overnight. And mostly sunny skies tomorrow too, high of 66, northwest wind to 15. Those kind of conditions look to continue through Sunday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska State House Speaker Louise Stutes joined us yesterday on Talk of the Rock. We will have some highlights. Senator Murkowski helped shepherd through 13 tribal energy grants. About half of those are going to Alaska. And a former Bethel Elementary School principal is sentenced.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Coronavirus infections and deaths are on the rise around the globe. The World Health Organization reports today fatalities climbed last week after 9 consecutive weeks of decline. The reversal blamed on low vaccination rates, lifting of restrictions, and the fast-spreading Delta variant of the virus now detected in 111 countries. In the wake of rare anti-government demonstrations in Cuba, President Biden's facing growing bipartisan pressure in the U.S. to step up support of the Cuban people. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports the White House says its policies on Cuba are still under review.
Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the White House is reviewing Trump-era policy with an eye toward the impact on the political and economic well-being of the Cuban people.
The nature of the kinds of changes that were made by the previous administration, like redesignating Cuba as a state sponsor of terror, carry significant statutory restrictions. We've been running a thorough policy process on these and other issues with support for democracy and human rights always at the core of our work.
Thousands of Cubans have taken to the streets to protest the government's handling of the coronavirus pandemic, economic hardship, and generations of dictatorship. The White House is calling for the swift release of demonstrators who've been unjustly detained. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
The head of the Federal Reserve anticipates inflation will remain elevated in the coming months before moderating.
Inflation is being temporarily boosted by base effects as the sharp pandemic-related price increases from last spring drop out of the 12-month calculation.
Jerome Powell testifying before a House committee today in prepared remarks, a Fed chair signaled that the central bank has no imminent plan to change its policies on interest rates. Low interest rates, meanwhile, have weighed on several of the biggest banks, but NPR's David Gurr reports they're reporting higher profits.
Bank of America and Wells Fargo said this week their profits went up in the last quarter as the U.S. emerges from the pandemic. The big banks put billions of dollars in reserve when COVID-19 started to spread, just in case they needed it to cover losses. But as the economy has improved, they've started to reallocate that money. Meanwhile, a booming market for deals and companies going public has led to higher profits at Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan, which do a lot of investment banking. But it's not all good news. Low interest rates are making it harder for banks to make as much money off of loans. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
Former Seahawks and 49ers star Richard Sherman's in a Washington state jail, charged with burglary, domestic violence. Public records at the King County Correctional Facility in Seattle also show the now NFL free agent has been denied bail. Authorities say he was attempting to break into a family member's home and fought with officers during the arrest. The case is under investigation as a felony. The Dow's closed up 44 points, ending the day at 34,933. This is NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Speaker for the Alaska State House and Kodiak Representative Louise Stutes joined KMXT's Talk of the Rock yesterday afternoon to discuss some of her points of interest for the upcoming special legislative session. Representative Stutes reiterated her belief that it would not be possible to have a $2,000 permanent fund dividend without dipping into the corpus. She claims that the funding model proposed by Governor Dunleavy would leave, quote, a $1 billion hole in the state budget, end quote. Additionally, Representative Stutes said that her priorities were to get the Power Cost Equalization Program past the veto, along with state scholarships, as well, and also the fate of the Alaska Marine Highway System and fully funding school bond debt. Look forward to more coverage from KMXT coming up soon. U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm said yesterday that 13 tribal energy grants had been awarded and about half are going to the Alaska Native communities. Granholm said the grants from the Office of Indian Energy will fund a total of 7 megawatts of clean power generation and battery storage.
And that will power 1,300 tribal buildings and save these 13 communities a combined $1.8 million annually.
In a Zoom conference call with reporters, Granholm gave special recognition to Senator Lisa Murkowski for supporting the Office of Indian Energy. Among the 7 Alaska grants, the largest is a $2 million grant to help NOAATAC and the Northwest Arctic Borough add solar energy and battery storage to the village's diesel-powered grid. The smallest grant on the list goes to Akiachak, with just over $100,000 to install energy-efficient furnaces and lights in multi-use buildings. Murkowski says that even the small grants are important.
Some may say, well, you're just changing out lights. And you know what? If we can reduce the costs, if we can reduce the diesel that is used in these communities to power their communities by any increment, that puts us money ahead.
The Office of Indian Energy was created in 2005. Murkowski says she helped expand grant eligibility in Alaska by allowing the funds to go to any census tract where most residents are native and by reducing the share local communities have to provide. Granholm thanked Murkowski for helping negotiate an infrastructure deal, which is likely to have more money for Indian Energy. A former Bethel Elementary School principal will spend 15 years in prison for trying to entice a child to engage in sexual activity in 2019. A U.S. District Court judge sentenced 57-year-old Christopher Carmichael in Anchorage on Tuesday after he pleaded guilty in February. Carmichael had faced additional charges of possession of child pornography and attempted transfer of obscene material to a minor, but those were dropped as part of a plea agreement. Carmichael's attorney, Alan Dyan, argued for a 15-year sentence, saying that Carmichael had a traumatic upbringing that included emotional and sexual abuse, starvation, and forced isolation.
It's a tragedy for everyone. You know, he was abused, she was, you know, it was just awful. I think it was a fair sentence and a good sentence, but it's just a tragedy.
In his statement to the court, Carmichael sobbed at times and apologized to the victim and the entire Bethel community. He said his grief for the harm he had caused was severe. Prosecutors had wanted Carmichael to stay behind bars for 40 years, more than twice what he received. Assistant U.S. Attorney Daniel Doty declined an interview after the hearing. In a written statement, the victim said she hoped Carmichael would spend the rest of his life in prison. She said she doesn't trust the world as she used to. U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Burgess agreed that Carmichael had cultivated, then abused the victim's trust. But Burgess said he was required to hand down a sentence that was sufficient, but not greater than necessary. He sent Carmichael to prison for 15 years with no chance at parole in the federal system, and a lifetime of supervised release. Carmichael faces sentencing in state court next week after pleading guilty to a charge of sexual abuse of a minor, but that sentence is expected to be served alongside his federal sentence after a plea deal with prosecutors. Earlier this month, the Department of Natural Resources granted 12 water rights permits to the proposed Donlin gold mine. KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports that the road to these permits have been paved with complaints from six Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta tribes who say their subsistence lifestyle will be negatively impacted by the mine's completion.
The 12 water rights permits that were approved by the Department of Natural Resources this month are wide-ranging in purpose. But essentially, bundled together, they'll let Donlin pump up ground, river, and creek waters.
When it pumps out water, it will basically take a lot of this water out of Crooked Creek, and it needs a state water rights permit to do so.
That's Miley Tevi-Puljalern. She's a senior attorney with Earth Justice, the environmental law firm representing the six YK Delta tribes in their legal battles against the proposed mine. The tribes are the Ahuzakhakhemut Native Council, the Chulunawik Native Community, the Native Village of Eek, Tuluksak Native Council, Kwitluk IRA, and the Kasigluk Traditional Council. The water Donlin pumps out will be used for a range of mining operations, like providing running water to staff restrooms and kitchens, and drying out the ground for mine digging. Attorney Tevi-Puljalern likens the process to digging in a sandbox.
It's very difficult to dig a deep hole if the sand is wet, but it's a lot easier if it's dry. So that's what Donlin has to do. It has to pump out water in order to go deep.
The Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, first announced its intent to grant the permits back in December and opened up a 15-day public comment period. ONC opposed the comment period on the grounds that it was too short, and eventually DNR did too.
They recognized that there was some deficiency, and then they opened a second comment period.
By the time the second 15-day comment period opened, Tevi-Puljalern's firm was representing not only ONC, but the five other YK tribes who are speaking out against the mine. The tribes oppose the water rights permits, saying that removing that much water from the area could hurt the region's water supply and the water dwellers.
The tribes having worries about contamination, destruction of salmon habitat, and concerns about clean water being then turned into mine process water.
Other tribal concerns come from lack of consultation.
Those concerns just underscore the significance and the importance of tribal consultation, something that was completely lacking here and that tribes have repeatedly requested and the state has denied.
The Department of Natural Resources wrote in its decision that the lack of consultation is not against the law in its eyes. It also said that it believes the public comment process was sufficient for tribes to express their viewpoints. DNR also wrote in its decision that it believed water quality and fish habitat would not be damaged. DNR wrote that it based this viewpoint on the issuance of a separate state water quality certificate that the DEC commissioner approved last month. ONC has filed an appeal against that decision in the state superior court and plans to take it all the way to the Alaska Supreme Court if need be. The Department of Natural Resources has given the tribes a 20-day appeal period for the dozen water rights permits. The appeal period will expire next week. At this time, the tribes have not said if they plan to appeal or not. For its part, Donlin Gold says it applauds the Alaska Department of Natural Resources for the, quote, thorough review process, end quote, and the decision to grant the permits. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
An evacuation order that's been in effect near the end of Chena Hot Springs Road due to the Munson Creek wildfire is being scaled back. State Forestry spokesperson Tim Mowry says area residents are being asked to remain ready in case things worsen again, but that the 38,000-acre fire is no longer growing significantly.
Not to any real big magnitude, at least in the areas, you know, that are of concern there along Chena Hot Springs Road or east of the resort.
Mowry says firefighters completed a burnout near Monument Creek, east of Chena Hot Springs, yesterday.
Burn out all the fuel between the creek and the main fire for about a mile stretch, and that was an area of concern.
Munson Creek fire operations are ramping down, and Mowry says the response will officially transition to a smaller organization on Saturday.
40 to 50 personnel range, you know, there'll be a crew there. There'll probably be a half dozen engines, some assorted, you know, a helicopter still, and some assorted overhead personnel.
Maori stresses that water pumps and sprinklers set up around area structures will remain in place and continue to be monitored in case fire activity increases. Critical race theory was not on the agenda of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Board meeting Monday night, or the meeting before it, but it's been coming up at those meetings anyway, as parents share concerns that their kids are being indoctrinated with a progressive agenda. Meanwhile, the district says it doesn't plan on teaching critical race theory at all. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Administrators say they've been getting messages from a lot of parents about critical race theory. Parent and retired teacher Susan Lockwood said Monday she worries about the values being taught in Kenai Peninsula schools.
Now we have the CRT, critical race theory, being pushed on our children. I ask myself, why?
Critical race theory originated in academia to explain how race and racism have impacted the country's legal system. It became a popular conservative rallying cry last summer for parents who fear their students are becoming indoctrinated with a liberal curriculum in public schools. Opponents of critical race theory, like former President Donald Trump, say they worry a curriculum that includes critical race theory would divide students based on race and teach kids to hate their country. And the topic is coming up at school board meetings across the country. But educators on the Kenai Peninsula say the debate over incorporating critical race theory into public schools is a red herring.
CRT or its tenets are not part of the KPBSD curriculum or what we do.
Clayton Holland is the incoming superintendent for KPBSD. What teachers will teach, he says, is the history of the country, including slavery and Jim Crow laws.
What our teachers don't do and will not do is teach their own personal ideology, personal politics, okay, try to influence or influence others with these, personal religion, or their social bias. We're not going to teach students they are racist or victims because of their skin color. And they're not going to separate students into groups based on the notion of suppressor groups or victim groups or the oppressed.
States like Texas have advanced bills to limit how race is taught in the classroom. There's no such legislation being considered in Alaska. Critical race theory did come up at a board meeting for the Anchorage School District last April, ahead of a vote over anti-racist education policies. None of the policies on the table explicitly mentioned critical race theory, and the policies ultimately passed. Soldotna High School teacher Nathan Erfurth, who's also the new Teachers Association president for KPBSD, says there's no part of the district's social studies curriculum that encourages the teaching of critical race theory.
Students in KPBSD are taught the following: what happened and who was involved. Through inquiry, research, projects, and activities that parents are encouraged to assist their students with, they are guided to expand their perspectives and build their critical thinking skills so that they are able to draw their own conclusions about what has happened in our past and what it means for our present.
Curriculum is just one of the issues that brought parents out to the school board meeting Monday night. Several also said they were concerned about the district's plan to revise its Title IX policies, a step to bring the district's discrimination complaint process in line with federal standards. The district plans to formalize the process for handling sexual misconduct and hire a Title IX coordinator to manage those complaints. Some parents say they worry Title IX policies will be used to defend transgender students or suppress free speech. Those concerns have recently emerged among an organized group of 100-plus Kenai Peninsula parents that goes by the name Kenai Peninsula Conservative Community Coalition, as reported by the Peninsula Clarion. Group members say they want to push back against what they consider a progressive agenda in schools in favor of a conservative Christian one, the Clarion reported. The group hosted an event at the same time as a school board meeting last night, featuring conservative website editor Joel Davidson. Davidson planned to speak about critical race theory, cancel culture, and, quote, Alaska LGBTQ community in education, according to the event page. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Brett Huber, a former top aide to Alaska GOP Governor Mike Dunleavy, has returned to the governor's office after running last year's campaign against the ballot measure that instituted ranked choice voting. Dunleavy's administration has clashed with Democratic President Joe Biden's administration over land management, oil development, and other issues, and Huber's new title is Senior Policy Advisor for Statehood Defense. His job, as the governor's office describes it in a statement, is, quote, pushing back on attempts from President Joe Biden's federal agencies to overregulate and overreach on Alaskans, close quote. A spokeswoman said she did not have information about Huber's salary. A request for records for that information is pending. Huber managed Dunleavy's successful gubernatorial campaign in 2018. Then he served in the governor's office as communications director and policy advisor. Huber left the governor's office last year to manage the campaign against the initiative to overhaul Alaska's elections. Huber's side lost by 1%.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Expo is back. More after this.
Grunden's Deck Boss 15-inch boots feature a protective toe cap, uppers that won't crack, and compression-molded rubber outsoles for better traction on wet decks. Made in USA.
One of the seafood industry's biggest and most popular trade shows is back and in person after COVID forced it to cancel last year. Pacific Marine Expo is set for November 18th through 20th in Seattle for its 55th year. The show is on track to again host about 500 vendors, and the timing will likely attract over 6,000 visitors.
Whenever the show dates are just prior to Thanksgiving, it's usually one of our most productive shows, and our exhibitors are very happy about it. So the dates are a jumping-off point for our Alaskan attendees that are traveling for Thanksgiving. They come to the event, spend a few days at the show, and then they either stay in Seattle or they travel throughout the country to visit family for the holiday.
Bob Callahan is Group Vice President and Expo Director. He adds that this year's show brings an added bonus for visitors.
And then this year is a bonus. The Seahawks play on Sunday. The day after the show closes, they play the Cardinals. So we'll be giving out Seahawk tickets throughout the event.
Expo, again, will feature fishing fan favorites and Alaska's own exhibition hall in a prime area.
We'll have the Alaskan Pavilion. That's looking very strong. 25% of our audience comes from Alaska, and we have about 50 companies that exhibit in the Alaskan Pavilion. It's a great atmosphere, and it's right adjacent to the beer garden.
Callahan says last year's COVID cancellation has made people value the in-person show experience even more.
An attendee will come to the event because they want to see the new product and new technology, but they also want to see the person behind the product, and that's who's selling the products. That's really important, and you can't get that over the internet and a webinar or in a digital format. So the face-to-face event, I think, is coming out stronger after COVID than people perceived before.
Registration for Expo begins in August, and ideas for speakers are being accepted through this Friday. Find out more at PacificMarineExpo.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 18. This announcement was issued at 10 a.m. July 13th. There will be a 72-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Tuesday, July 13th until 9 p.m. Friday, July 16th in the following areas. The Cape Alitak, Humpy Deadman, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, the Duck Bay and Iduit Bay sections of the Afognak District, which open at noon Tuesday, July 13th, will be extended to remain open until further notice, the inner and outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Wednesday, July 14th, and remain open until further notice. Closed water adjustments. Closed waters will be reduced in Katoy Bay to the 80 F&G markers located in Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252, 323, and 252, 324. As previously announced, there will be an 81-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 13th to 9 p.m. Friday, July 16th in the following areas. The Northwest Kodiak District, except the Kujuyak Bay section, will remain closed. The Northeast Kodiak District, except the Buskin River section, will remain closed. The East Side Kodiak District and the Afognak District, except the inner and outer Katoybe sections, will open noon Wednesday, July 14th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, July 13th to 9 p.m. Thursday, July 15th in the mainland district. The outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District will remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. Until further notice, in that portion of the Northwest Kodiak and Southwest Kodiak districts, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, Chinook salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse-seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Short notice, in-period closures may occur for seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof Strait area, as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. Cost recovery fisheries have begun in the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishery opportunities in the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area will be dependent on the ability to meet KRAA cost recovery needs. Cost recovery information can be obtained by calling 486-6559. Closed waters are as shown on the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 14th day of July, the year 2021. The sun rose at 5:31. It will set again at 10:58, giving us 17 hours and 28 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 3 minutes and 1 second compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 79, that was set in 2003. And our record low was 38, set in 1927, currently 57 degrees. We did briefly hit our predicted high of 59. Partly sunny skies are called for the rest of the day, north wind to 10. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 52, southeast to 5, becoming completely calm overnight. And for tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, high near 66. Northeast winds, northwest winds to 15 miles per hour. Mostly clear skies overnight Thursday night with a low around 54 and west wind to 15, and mostly sunny skies on Friday with a high near 64. Saturday also sunny, high near 67. We just had a low tide at 11:41. That was a minus 0.8 foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 6:17 this evening and be 7.2 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Larsen Bay tides, your high tide just happened at 12:09. That was a minus 0.9 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 6:37 this evening of 12.7 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. North wind 15 knots right now, seas to 5 feet. Thursday and Thursday night, west 20, seas to 5 feet. Over in the Shelikof, northeast 10 right now, becoming southwest 15 late tomorrow afternoon. For tonight through Thursday night, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet. The Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska is hosting webinars in July and August statewide via Zoom. The next one is tomorrow. It's going to happen between 1 and 2 p.m., and it's going to be about art links, promoting self-expression in the form of art. Registration for the event and additional information can be found on their website at allsalaska.org. That's ALZAlaska.org. Nominating petitions for 1 2-year city mayor seat and 2 3-year city council seats are available in the city clerk's office now. For additional information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. The Kodiak Public Library will be closed tomorrow, all day, for staff safety training. Normal hours resume Friday. And on Saturday at 11 a.m., the library will resume the monthly craft sessions. This month, participants will create a mosaic-framed mirror. Each session is limited to 15 people and suitable for children over 10. To sign up, contact the library at 486-8686.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.